Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by the Vacation Planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And if you want top-notch service and the best value for your vacation dollar, visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. Also brought to you by All-Star Vacation Homes, who offer you the highest quality in either a vacation home or condo. Hospitality has a new name, and it's All-Star Vacation Homes. Visit them at www.allstarvacationhomes.com.
This is Kurt Bauer from Syracuse, New York, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Mickey Miles Podcast.
My name is Michelle Scribner-McLean, and today I'm flying solo. Unfortunately, my co-host is a little bit under the weather today, so he has trusted the hosting skills and privileges to me today. I know I'm not going to live up to what he does, but we're going to do the best we can. We miss him. Today, before we get into our topic, I wanted to give a shout-out, and the shout-out is to somebody who I met today at the BAA, Boston Athletic Association 10K on Boston Common and all around Boston. Her name is Amanda Turner-Russell, and she just happened to be right behind us in the corrals waiting to start. She and another woman had both done dopey. So anyway, I had a nice chat with Amanda. She's a nurse at Brigham and Women's, and I wanted to give her a shout-out. It was a really fun race, and a lot of Mickey Milers were there. Kimberly Torres-Markey, Mike was there, and Jennifer Teague von Hoffman, Charlie Gessner, and Heather Melito Dazan, and my little guy Liam got a 30. He PR'd by 30 seconds, so fun race. And I got another unicorn for the collection. So today I want to introduce my guest, and then we'll talk about what the topic is today because he actually came up with the topic. And my guest is somebody who's been on the show before, a very experienced runner, and his name is Chris Trawick. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Did I say that right, Trawick?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, good.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. So, Chris, I know you're from Georgia, right?
I am. I'm from Georgia.
Okay. So why don't you remind everybody what your running experience is, and then we'll dive into the topic that you suggested.
Sure thing. So I have been running, I guess, for right at about 9 years now. I think I started in the same manner that a lot of us did, just wanting to be more healthy and more fit. And like I think everyone probably listening to this episode and this podcast, got bitten by the bug. And so I've started out with the 5K, 10K, couch to 5K type plan, and went through, the half marathon, marathon thing, and I've done Goofy a couple of times, a couple of Disney half marathons, a couple of Disney marathons. I think everything that I've done from Run Disney perspective has been confined to marathon weekend, though, so I haven't branched out enough, I guess. But anyway, going on 9 years, and I think as the subject of this podcast episode will prove, we learn as we go. We never will learn at all, and we're all prone to make the same mistakes that we think we'll never make again, but we still do.
Yeah, this is a great topic. And if you're on the Facebook on the Mickey Miles page, Chris always or often chimes in with some really good information at a different level than I know that I am at. He's really thought about a lot of different things from different perspectives, so we really appreciate that. And one thing that I talk about all the time on the podcast, and I know Mike agrees, is that running is really kind of like teaching. You're always learning how to do it. You're doing it better. And Chris, you have some miles under your belt, and we're going to talk about mistakes that we make, but in a certain frame. It's warm weather again, at least for the Northeast. I know in Georgia you probably are warm for a lot longer during the year, but We've talked about this a little bit, but I wanted to bring it up again because I think it's a good reminder. And so our topic is, what are the mistakes that you can make when you're running in summer weather, and how can you avoid them? So we're going to come up with a list. And Chris, I know that you had a story, something happened to you, or at least a few somethings happened to you that reminded you what an important topic this is, even for people who are experienced. Can you share it with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the one thing, not being from the New England area or a part of the country that's really suffers with cold weather during the winter months, you know, in wintertime, we have the luxury of going out and training, and you can make mistakes in the wintertime. And short of, you know, getting lost in a blizzard and freezing to death, I suppose, you can recover from most of those mistakes. But with summertime and with the heat and the humidity, it's just really imperative for us to realize as runners that there can be some life-threatening situations that you can get into, or at least extremely hazardous situations. So it's really incumbent upon us to plan ahead and really think through, you know, some of the risks that are out there, and try to take reasonable steps to make sure that we don't find ourselves in a bad spot. So I think this is going to be a good topic.
So this is a great reminder, again, whether you're experienced or you're just starting out. So Chris, do you want to start us off with your first tip, the first thing
absolutely.
That you shouldn't forget? Go ahead.
Absolutely. So the way I phrase these are the 10 commandments of summertime training, the 10 commandments of summertime.
I think we have a show title. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Number one, I put them in the vernacular as well. Number one, thou shall respect the temperature and humidity, for they will win every single time.
Okay, why don't you tell us what you mean?
Okay, so as a lot of us are still training, or at least just trying to stay consistent with our running during the summertime, obviously there's some steps we can take to try to avoid the hottest parts of the day. But even in the earlier parts of the day or the later parts of the evening, the temperature and the humidity have such a significant effect on your hydration level, on your ability to regulate your blood flow. You know, I think all of us have probably noticed when you get out there and run in the summertime in, you know, warmer temperatures, it's harder to maintain a consistent pace. Your heart rate's elevated, you know, consistently higher than it is normally during cooler periods of the year. So it's just really important that we try to be able to identify when sometimes the temperature and the conditions outside may dictate that we may need to take a day off and stay out of that particular risk zone. This is hard for a lot of runners to do. It's hard for me to do as well. But as we get older, it becomes more and more evident to me.
So I agree. I actually had that on my list too, Chris. So that's going to mean that we're looking at the weather a few days out, or at least a day out, kind of looking at your training schedule to see if you can move things around. You might change the time of the day that you're going. You might back it up so it's a little bit earlier.
Even cross training
that day, you know, right. It's not that you're necessarily giving up, but maybe you're going to spend a day in the gym that day.
Right.
So really planning ahead. So it's not, as you point out, it's not just temperature, it's humidity as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely do that. Do you want to go on with your list? And then if there are any that I have on mine, that we'll add them at the end.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
All right. Number two. Thou shalt run in early morning or in late evening when needed. This is a big one. There, in the other parts of the country, you may be able to get away. I know some people are fortunate and able to get away with still having, you know, some of those nice midday weekend long runs and the such. But I know here in the southern United States, it's very, very challenging to do that, and it can be, you know, it can be very, very risky to do so. So one of the things that I know I try to coach people on is to really take advantage of those early morning hours before the sun reaches its zenith and the UV index is so much higher, or later in the evening. I see a lot of people on our running trails here. I see a lot more people in the later evening right before dusk, and that's a good way to stay out of the direct impact of the sun. It's still humid for certain, but just to be cognizant of the danger that really does lurk in those midday hours with the heat.
I agree. So not so much a maybe in August here in the Northeast, but I spent a month in Florida last summer, and any runs that I had to do, especially long runs, were before the sun was rising. So I wanted to point out for safety, though, for women who are running, I run when I go to Austin with my friend Jill Bent Moore, and she has a group of women who run together. And they meet, you know, Austin, of course, is very humid in the summer, can get up to like 110 degrees. But they meet before the sun rises, and they run as a group all the time. So that's just something to point out, too. Now, my co-host, even though he isn't here, he actually pointed out that was on his list, too. And one of the things that he said is that he always tries to run in the morning versus night because sometimes the heat will build during the day. What do you think about that, Chris?
Good point. That's a very good point. It really, a lot of us really struggle just because of our scheduling, and it becomes a lot more challenging. I'm a big fan of running later in the evening, considerably later, but for those,
yeah, I don't think you're typical. You run at midnight,
no.
Right?
I'm not typical in many ways, but that's a good point you made, Michelle, that especially for the females that are listening, is you may have to you know, amend your schedule and do it during some, you know, pre-dark or post-dark hours, but safety still, you know, needs to be the overriding concern,
right? And wearing your reflective clothing too.
Yes.
All right, number three.
Number three, thou shall carry cash and or credit card. This one is really key. In probably the last month or so, I've gone out mid to later afternoon, you know, for a long run, and, you know, just around town or through, you know, some of the more urban areas. And, you know, you pack your hydration. You may, you know, have a water belt or a hydration system or whatever that you may take with you, but especially if you're out and about in areas in which there's a convenience store or a, you know, gas station or whatever, it is always a good idea to have cash and or credit card on you so that if you find yourself without fluids, you have an option to be able to get in and purchase some. So that has saved me on a couple of occasions. So I recommend that to
people.
Chris,
I love that one. You know, that was something I did not have on my list, but I cannot tell you the number of times that I have been in that situation and wish that I had, you know, just $10 on me. And I know so many runner friends who always say this, I always carry $10 or I always put my credit card in there. So,
right.
Yeah, I know I run on a rail trail. If we get up like 5 miles in, you know, there's a convenience store there. And if it gets too overwhelming, you're going to want to make sure that you have extra hydration, or if something happens and you're drinking a little bit faster than you thought. I love that one. That's great. What's the next one?
All right, number four, thou shall identify yourself. Now, we've talked about it before. I know I think both of us are big fans of some of the road ID products, the personal identification, the little dog tags or the wrist band things, mm-hmm. or the little shoe collar things. It's especially in the summertime, in the hotter months, it's very important that you have some type of identification and emergency contact information on you in the event that something unforeseen happened, be it, you know, heat injury or mechanical injury or something like that. It is always a good idea to don't fail to go out the door without some type of emergency contact information on your person so that emergency responders or a passerby would know what to do and who to contact if something unfortunate were to happen.
Exactly right. And I know that I have a little one for my shoe, and I think it's not really a luxury. You know, you have to have it. You definitely have to spend the money to have some sort of ID on you. I know that sometimes the running expenses build up, but I think that's probably, you know, even before good sneakers, you want to make sure you have some sort of ID on you. So I love that. And again, I plug the Road ID app whenever I go out and I'm by myself. I let at least two people know where I am. And if you use the Road ID app on your cell phone, and I just tuck my cell phone in a pocket and, you know, and leave it in the back. I never even touch it while I'm running, but people can follow me, and there's a stationary alert. So if I stop moving for any period of time, whatever I set it to be, it will let those people know by text that I've stopped moving. So
that would have been a handy thing to have for me yesterday, so we can talk about that later.
Sure. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Number five, thou shalt pay attention to the UV index and consider it often. So even in those earlier morning or later afternoon hours, especially in the summertime months, the peak summertime months, still very, very important that if you're out and you're exposed. I know a lot of guys I run with wear visors. I wear visors during the summer as well. The UV rays are just at such an intensity in the summer months that it's really important that you keep some type of skin protection on and apply it regularly. There's some really good sunblock products out there that are meant for athletic type events where they don't wash off with sweat as much as some of the older products that we grew up with did, and those are really important. I personally know of at least 4 or 5 runners that have been diagnosed with skin cancer or various types of melanomas, and they attribute it directly to just not protecting their skin with a good sunblock over the years of being out in the summertime.
I agree, and you have another friend who's had it, and it was very surprising because I was not somebody who bathed in the sun a lot, but a lot of outside sports and tennis. And lo and behold, about 2 years ago, I had a spot on my nose, and it was basal cell carcinoma. So that's exactly what I do, and I agree there are some great athletic sunscreens, and you have to use them because what will happen if you don't use one of those is that when you start to sweat, it drips into your eyes, and I know I wear contacts. Even if you don't, you'll be stinging, but a visor. I made that mistake today. I thought it's just a 10K. I'm going to be breezing through this. Boy, did I wish I had a visor. And it's really something that you just can't break that rule. You have to go out all the time, a visor, a hat, and the sunscreen. And then, as my dermatologist says all the time, reapply. So I bring a little one with me, when I can, and I have one in the car, and I reapply it just before I start running, and sometimes if it's a long run, right in the middle too. I love that one.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, number 6, and this is a thou shall not. Thou shall not overeat before the run begins. So as the summertime and the heat and humidity, the effect that has on the body, your body really, once you get above about 70 to 71 degrees, your body's core temperature, the way the body tries to maintain that core temperature when you're exposed to a heat source such as sunlight, direct sunlight, is your body's going to start shunting blood away from your digestive tract, from your GI tract, and keep it to the surface of your skin. That's how we start sweating. That's how our body attempts to keep our core temperature down. Well, as you do that, as your body does that, it's less blood that's being concentrated in your gut and your GI tract for processing food. So whereas in November, let's say, you can perhaps eat a larger meal, an hour before you go out to run, it's more of a challenge for your body to handle that in the summer months when you're going out and your body is now forcing itself to try to keep your core temperature cool through the sweating process. Therefore, that food has a lot harder time for your body to digest and can cause a lot of GI distress for people. Some people are a little more prone to this than others, but it's definitely something that's I've found to be more of a challenge in the summertime. So personally, I have to just dial back what I eat and the quantity that I'll eat leading up to a run outside.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's just like a whole new ball game in terms of your nutrition, I think, in the hot weather. I have a question for you, and I've been meaning to ask Tara Guidus this too, but it seems to me when I'm doing runs when it's warmer that I actually go through more goos faster. Does that happen to you?
It does. That as well. The one thing that I've noticed, especially with the gels and the products, the beauty of gels and goos and blocks and chews and all those things, but especially the gels, is that they're balanced to, number one, streamline absorption into the bloodstream to get all the sucrose, the glucose, the minerals, all the good stuff into your bloodstream, through the stomach into the bloodstream. So it doesn't take a tremendous amount, and your body on average, if you're out exercising aerobically, your body is looking to consume between 260 and 310 calories per hour. So the gel is typically 100 calories, sometimes 120, depending on the brand. But in the summer months, when it's warmer out there, your body ultimately is going to try to satisfy that 260 to 300 calorie need that it has, and that's just to maintain your basal metabolic function, your body just subsisting normally. And then as your muscles are working, as you're running, your breathing's labored, all those things, your body wants to be able to ingest those calories and pull that fuel in and be able to convert it to energy to use it. But it's rare to find something that it can process quickly enough to allow itself to handle that many calories. But the gels, really, if you can stomach gels, and I know it, there's a lot of people that really can't, just psychologically or just taste or whatever, but I've noticed that as well, that I can, I'll go through a lot more gels when it's warmer than I do during the winter or the cooler months.
Yeah, I've noticed during races that if it's warmer, I have to pack 1-2 extra gels, maybe 3 extra gels during those races.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, what's the next one?
Okay, this is number 7. Thou shall not go forth and train at wintertime pace. Adjust your expectations.
Like it.
Yeah, we've all found this. I don't think I have to say anything about this one. You can't run in July and June the pace that you can run in November because your body's having to work harder. You know, one thing that we talk about hydration, I read something from a physician friend who's also a runner, and it talked about, you know, at any given time, the human body is dehydrated by a minimum of 10%. Just waking up in the morning, first thing, your body is dehydrated by 10% on average, at least. As you go out and start running, if you think about it, so your blood has a certain amount of water volume, plasma, whatever you want to call it. So your blood is a certain thickness. That's what your heart is having to pump through your body to satisfy the muscle demands of you working hard. If you think about dehydration, what are you losing? You're losing water. Okay, you're losing electrolytes and the like, but you're losing water. You take that water, some of that water, 10% out of your bloodstream, your blood is now thicker. Your blood is now more difficult to pump through to your muscles. That's part of why your heart rate is so much higher in the summertime. If you run a 10-minute pace, let's say, in the spring and in the winter, and you go out in the summertime today and try to run a 10-minute pace, it more than likely is going to feel like it's a harder effort. And that's why, because your body is having to pump, your heart's having to pump thicker blood because of the natural state of dehydration we're in, which we'll get into another one of our items here in just a moment.
So you're saying adjust your pace so that it's slower in these warmer weathers. Warmer weather. Yeah.
Absolutely. Go by effort, not by what your pace typically is. Go by the way you feel.
Terrific. Okay, the next one?
Okay, the next one. Thou shalt let someone know when you will return.
And this kind of one you had. Yeah.
So this one, very key. Again, in summertime, there's just so much more of a risk for something to happen physiologically with the heat. Better to let someone know where you're going and when you'll be back so that if you don't or if something happens, someone can come look for you.
Excellent. Okay, what's on the list next?
Number 9, thou shall not forget that electrolytes are vital. Okay. Water, we probably consume a lot of water throughout the day. I know I do as well. One thing changes with summer. You get out and you start running in the heat, and you're going to sweat. Obviously, you're going to lose fluids, yes. Water is not your primary need in the summer months when you're training. Your primary need is electrolyte. As you sweat, you're losing water indeed, but you're losing all the trace minerals, the potassium, the magnesium, the sodium, all the things that water is not going to replenish. So what I tell people that I coach and informally coach is that drink water throughout the day, certainly, but as you lead up to a training effort or a long run or just a training run, begin to augment that with some electrolyte. Get the calories that your body's going to need to fuel your muscles and build up those stores of the minerals and the electrolyte, the sodium, the potassium, the magnesium that are going to be lost as well, because that literally is your power source.
And what about electrolyte pills, Chris, during a warm weather run?
Right. Those are very good. And those are actually a very good augmentation for if you're out doing a long run is to they're just basically salt capsules. They're not the kind of salt. They're not table salt. It's not sodium chloride, but it's a more easily digested salt that you can get. You can do a Google search on running and salt tablets, and you can find some. Those are also very helpful. But if you're doing the electrolyte replacement, you know, the Gatorade, the Powerade, the Noon, whatever, then that typically contains the balance that you need.
Yep. So what I do when I'm carrying those is to just get a little sandwich bag and put them in the sandwich bag. Is that what you do? Or
It is. I'll tell you another good secret is, okay, if you go to the supermarket and go to the candy aisle by the checkout register, you may find the little tubes of little mini M&Ms, the candies.
Oh, yeah.
Empty one of those out. Don't eat M&Ms, pour them out, I recommend. And you can store, and it's got a, you know, good clip top, and you can slip those in a pocket or in your water belt, and that works real well also.
Yeah, you know what I'm noticing too is I have, because I'm a teacher, I have emergency Tylenol at my desk at work.
And oh, good,
you know,
idea.
A travel Tylenol. It's even smaller
right.
than that, so you could probably fit, you know, it's for 10 capsules of Tylenol.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I asked. What's your next one?
All right, number 10, the last one. And we can all relate to this. Remember the Body Glide and keep it handy.
Chafing. I had that on my list. Chafing with an exclamation point.
Chafing is no one's friend. So, yes, that is, I'm convinced the Body Glide company and the other similar lubricant companies probably do a pretty good business this time of year.
Yeah, and you know so what? It's any place
that's number 10.
Any place that any material or anything is touching another part, or any skin is touching other skin. I also have found that, I don't know if this is just me, I've never actually mentioned this to anybody, but I also put it on my toenails and on the tips of my toes when I was losing toenails when I did my first marathon. And also, and I heard a runner saying this in a race that I was in 2 weeks ago. I thought I was the only one who did this. I put it where my elbow bends. Because it gets really wet, like sweat. It doesn't chafe, but it just gets really icky there. So I don't know. I put it everywhere.
You cannot go wrong. You will never finish a run or a race and think to yourself, I put too much lubricant on.
Exactly. Okay, you can't go back after you made that mistake, right?
Absolutely.
What's the next one?
That is it. That is number 10.
Okay, so I had, let's see. I had sunscreen. I just had sunglasses, wearing sunglasses. I think this is a preference thing, but I was at a race today, very, very sunny race. The last few races I've been have been very sunny. And it just really, for me, just really helps to protect my eyes. I actually am at an age now where I found some sunglasses at my local bike shop that are sort of like I have magnification in them, so I can see my, I can wear my contacts.
I need to look for some of
those.
They're
awesome. I'll give, I don't know the name of them, but it's on the case, but I'll put them in the show notes. But, wearing sunglasses, it's another thing that I never feel like, I'm really sorry that I brought my sunglasses. Sometimes during shady parts, I'll put them up on my hat, but just to have them is fantastic.
Sure.
Let's see. I had sunscreen, heat, hat, time of day. Oh, another one is clothing. The type of clothing that you're wearing. The old adage that it's going to feel, 20 degrees warmer when you start running. And I had this happen to me today, and I'm somebody who's constantly cold. But we got onto Boston Common to start our race, and it was about, 60. And I'm glad that I checked a bag because I ended up checking just the shirt that I wore, a long sleeve shirt, to walk from my car onto where we were starting the race. And I thought, 60, I'm going to be too cold. And you always have to plan that when you start running, especially in these warmer weathers, that whether that you want to peel back on the layers, even if you're starting off with a little bit of a chill, to wear a tank top. And And another thing, too, is that, there's really nice moisture wicking stuff. You have to pay a little bit more for it, but it really helps to not wear cotton, to wear the real nice running stuff that's moisture wicking.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I've noticed also the last few shirts that I bought to train in, they actually are treated with SPF 50 and higher for UV protection as well. The actual material is. which is even, you know, an added benefit for when you are out there, especially on your shoulders, if it's a full, you know, t-shirt or not so much a tank top, but having the shirt that's actually the garment that's been pre-treated for sun protection, that's a big plus.
And you are paying a little bit more, but I think it makes a difference. And
you
and,
are.
And sometimes if it's sunny, you know, like it was today, you know, I might run in a tank top, but then I thought short sleeves will probably be better because it's going to be less sunblock and it's going to be covering me. So, I think that makes a difference too. You know, and we've talked about socks before, especially in the warm weather, you know, spending the extra money and buying some really nice socks, I think helps. And the other thing that, I had on my list, and Mike pointed out too, when he gave me his list, was when you're planning your route, you can plan an area that's more shady. So really look ahead of time to kind of think about where you're running and maybe change your route to a place that's a little bit more shady.
Good point.
Chris, this was really, really good. You gave me some things to think about, but before I let you go, I know that you had something happen to you recently where kind of brought this into your mind, why this is an important reminder for everybody.
Well, you know, I sure will. So quickly, you know, all these things are so, as we all listen to them, they're all pretty intuitive. This is nothing brilliant that I've thought up by any means. They're actually all the things that I've done wrong and seem to continue to do wrong on a regular basis. I was out for a run yesterday. I was out for about a 23 miler. This was on some pretty rugged trail system, in some mountain area where I live. And I had actually gone with a buddy, which I rarely ever do. Long story short, you know, I planned all this. I took what I thought was plenty of hydration. We hid bottles of electrolyte along the trail, you know, miles and miles ahead, and had everything planned out. But we went in the wrong part of the day. We left and went at 9 o'clock in the morning and, you know, planned on a 4 or 5 hour run. And, we got to one of the places we had dropped a bottle, and the bottle wasn't there, a bottle of hydration. And
wow.
I thought, well, we'll just keep going. It was about a 6 mile section until the next place we had dropped electrolytes. And long story short, I didn't make it, and I ran out of electrolyte. I was dehydrated, probably the worst I've ever been. Nausea, dizziness. I kept stumbling.
Oh my gosh.
If to be completely honest, I had to send the guy that was with me. He was still doing reasonably well. I had to send him 4 or 5 miles up the trail to retrieve a bottle and bring it back to me. Had he not, I don't know what would have happened. But it was to the point where I couldn't walk, and I would just lay on the side of the mountain and just I knew what was happening in my, you know. Mentally, I knew that I was dehydrated and I knew what was happening to me, but I was completely powerless to do anything about
it. Wow, that is really scary, Chris. How do you feel today?
I feel great. Once, you know, about 2 hours later, everything was good. And I look back and I think, you know, wow, I'm sitting here. I'm probably the least qualified to talk about the 10 things that you shouldn't do when I do, you know, 8 of them 24 hours previous. But that's really why I say, it's so very important that we realize in summertime we can make a mistake, but we may not be able to recover from
it.
That's
right. That's right. Well, I hope you're going to be following this list too, and I hope it benefits our listeners. I know that we did I don't know which podcast it was, but we did have Steve Barrett come on, the Hidden Mickey guy, who's an ER physician, and he talked about the signs of dehydration, and there are many of the things, of course, that you mentioned, the dizziness. The inability to walk, of course, is a big one, but, you know, the color of your urine and things like that. And it can sneak up. It snuck up on Mike when he did the Disneyland half, and it wasn't actually for him until several hours after the race. So definitely, we should probably mention this, too, that it's not just hydration before and during. It's hydration after you
yes.
finish, too, to keep on going. That was one of the things that they said out in the sun today when we finished the race. The race director was on the PA system, and they said, keep on drinking for the next few hours. So
right.
I'm sure that you did that, too.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're okay. And
me too.
Hopefully these tips will help some of our listeners to plan their runs and to make sure that they are safe and have an enjoyable run. And Chris, I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing this information.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks. So for Chris Trawick and for myself, Michelle Scribner-McLean, and for my co-host who isn't feeling well, but he's not dehydrated. He's just not, he has a little bit of a cold. This is Michelle, and we will see you on the road.
This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by All Star Vacation Homes. If you are looking for the highest quality vacation home or condo for your next Walt Disney World vacation, then you need to visit them at www.allstarvacationhomes.com, where hospitality has a new home. And by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, nobody can give you better service and get more for your vacation dollar than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. So for your next Disney or non-Disney vacation, visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.